morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 22nd GNSO EPVP team meeting taking place on the 1st of November 2018 at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you were only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Ashley Heineman of the GAC, Georgia Salentes of GAC, Krista Spain, ICANN Board, and Leon Sanchez of ICANN Board. They have formally assigned Lorene Kappen and Chris Lewis Evans as their alternates for this call and any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod to the right and also the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, if you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you, and with this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and thanks everyone for attending today. The agenda is up in front of you. After some opening administration remarks, we're going to discuss Purpose E, which has to do with data escrow, and there are really two parts to data escrow, the registry data escrow and registrar data escrow. So there's two parts to that, and we've been working on gathering data elements for that. So I think we're pretty close to complete, and then we want to share with you the first version, the proposed draft initial first version of the initial report that we've been working on, you know, up until not too many minutes ago. And so, well, we haven't distributed yet. We'll take you through it, and we'll put up a link to a wiki page so you can download it if you want. So that's the agenda, and with that in mind, I just want to remind you to complete the face-to-face doodle poll. We know who hasn't completed it yet, but there's no public shaming here, so or at least yet. So if you would do that, we will set the meeting. Hopefully, we'll cast dates by the end of the week, which is tomorrow, and then make arrangements with the meetings team and get confirmation on that the first of next week. There's the link to the doodle poll right there. For outstanding action items, could that document be put up and either Caitlin or Marika take us through that? Hey, can I pause this for 1 minute and allow Cavus to make a short announcement regarding the ITU election? Oh, the ITU election. I thought this was about the doodle poll, Cavus, but go ahead. You have 30 seconds.
Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening to everyone. Sister organization, the ITU, has an election of leadership today, and Mr. Hu Linzhao from China was re-elected as the Secretary General. Mr. Malcolm Johnson from the United Kingdom was re-elected as the Deputy Secretary General, and Dr. Chae Sub-Lee from Republic of Korea as Director of Telecommunication and Standardization Bureau, and Mrs. Doreen Martin Dogan was elected as the first lady in the ITU as the Director of the Telecommunication Development Bureau. Thank you.
So, Cavus, I have a yes or no answer. Is that set of elections good for the multi-stakeholder model?
I think the election is always ITU improving its situation with the multi-stakeholder process, and there are new proposals to bring ICANN and all other organizations in the ICANN, which is currently in a footnote in the resolutions, into the body of the resolution. If this is successful, that would be another step toward a better collaboration with the ITU and ICANN. And I, as a member of the ITU, going to that meeting next week, will do our best to improve these relations and to work together fruitfully and successfully and positively. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavuz. Caitlin, would you go through the action items, please?
Yes, Kurt, thank you. This is Caitlin Tubergen for the transcript. As I mentioned on Tuesday's call, we still have some outstanding action items that were circulated during the face-to-face meeting in Barcelona. So if everyone can please remember to submit their feedback for small teams 1 and 2, which are the natural versus legal debate and the geographic basis, respectively. The original date for submission of feedback on those was, I believe, October 29th, Monday. However, please get all feedback by tomorrow, November 2nd, so that staff can incorporate that into the draft initial report. Similarly, feedback on the data elements workbooks for the purposes for processing is also due on tomorrow or Friday, November 2nd. Also, the document that we circulated at the face-to-face, which isolates the responsible party, so controller versus processor, please also submit feedback on that by tomorrow, November 2nd. And just quickly, a couple of action items remaining from Tuesday's meeting. Margie, you are to provide some further details on UDRP details for Purpose B. Please provide that by tomorrow so that we can incorporate it into the initial report. And also, I believe Christina, Milton, and Amr were going to discuss Purpose N further to see if any additional language needed to be incorporated into the data elements workbook for Purpose N. And that's all of the action items I have. Back over to you, Kurt.
Thanks very much. And it looks like that there was progress on that last action item, judging from the chat. So to sort of emphasize the importance of getting this done, Marika, could you put up the timeline that we put up in the last meeting? And I just want to point out that, and this should be shared with the group, and I think what we should do is put this in graphic form to make it clear to people like me that like pictures better than words. But if you scroll through it, you'll find that, essentially time's up. You know, I think this group's done a great job, in large part arriving at consensus on, or not, I don't want to say the word consensus yet because I'm not allowed to, but, you know, agreements on some really tough issues. And I think many of the toughest issues are behind us, but in the next few weeks, I think we want to identify the gaps we have in the initial report and fill as many of them in as possible, because if this initial report isn't complete enough to, pass muster, then another initial report will be required, and that'll mean we miss our deadline. And, you know, this date for publishing the initial report here is pretty much hard up against it. There might be a few more days. So the first step of that is completing these action items. So I urge you to do that. And, you know, I can't believe I'm giving this speech because I'm not very good at these sorts of speeches, because I know you know the importance of what we're doing and the importance of hitting these deadlines more than I. Marika, do you have one more thing to add?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. If I can just, you know, make one additional point as part as well of encouraging people to really get, you know, any issues that they think need further discussion, especially when looking at the data element workbooks and the small team language, in by this Friday, because that will be essential for leadership team and staff to plan out, the meetings that are needed between now and the target date for publication to make sure we're able to address all those comments. So, again, it doesn't necessarily need to be a full-fledged, this is a rewrite of, a certain data element workbook, but we're mainly looking for is flagging items that, you feel uncomfortable about or you think are not fully fleshed out yet that need further consideration by the group. So, again, we're able between, Friday and 19th of November, which is the target date, to map out, the topics that need to be covered and also align that with the calls that will be needed. I think we're still working on the, two calls a week, but we may need to see if additional time is needed to get through that to make sure we can factor that in.
Benedict, do you have something? Thanks, America.
Yes, America. Thanks, Marika. Just wondering if there's place for sort of editing for clarity at this stage. Would you like that to happen now, or would you like that to happen later on? Thanks.
So, I like clarity, and as I read through the initial report, I was making those same kind of judgments too. So, if you think something is unnecessarily vague, I think editorial is okay, but I would be very judicious because you want to be careful not to change the meaning. You know how we discuss individual words, and so I found myself resisting the urge to do that. So use your best judgment and 2H pencil. I hope that's good enough direction, Christina.
Yeah, Christina with that Registry Stakeholder Group. Thank you for providing this updated timeline, especially in the visual form, which is much easier for me and I think a lot of folks. I think the one thing that frankly jumps out at me, or rather its omission jumps out at me, is the absence of any supplemental public comment period. And to me, that's concerning for a couple reasons. First, it suggests that there won't be any material change to any of the recommendations after the initial report goes out for public comment. And second, and a corollary factor, is it also seems to presume that we're essentially ruling out from the outset that there could be any public comment that we would receive that would perhaps cause us to reevaluate and then make additional changes. And if those are both true, I'm a little concerned by that. And I suspect that there might be some additional explanation or background that the leadership team could shed on this. Thanks.
Like this, just want to make sure I was unmuted. I think this follows the GNSO policy manual, or at least the manual for the process for the expedited policy development. There is, a step 12, publish recommendations for public comment. So, first of all, we're trying to hit a date, so we all know we have to be somewhat pragmatic about that. And second of all, if there is a public comment that sort of derails the thinking or something like that, we can, that gives us the opportunity to say, whoa. So to a certain extent, actually to a real extent, this is a, quote unquote, go right schedule. But we essentially need things to go right in order to hit our date. So I think there's that emergency stop in there with a second public comment before the board considers the recommendation. And, we as a group can either, recommend to the GNSO Council, or the GNSO Council itself will say, whoa, look at this. I don't think this is ready to go for the board. We want to take it down. So I think there's that stop in there. And then, the third point I want to make is, and this is a very pragmatic point, but there's no represented group in our community that's not part of this, and there's no represented group that's not consulted with by the members here that's not part of this, and our discussions are pretty much in depth. So I'll be sort of surprised if we learn of approaches that we haven't considered yet. And so I'm not overly concerned about bombs in the public comment, but I think there's a relief valve if that does occur. So I don't know if that's a good answer or not. And Christina, you're welcome to respond to me if you want before I call on Caboose.
No, I just put in chat what I was going to say. Namely, I think it would be really helpful to include either in connection, you know, maybe a foreword or I don't even know, something in connection with the initial report that lays out this timeline that specifically addresses kind of where we might have that additional public comment period, particularly because, and I have not looked at the most recent draft, but I know that we've talked for a couple of these topics that we should put questions out to the community. And I think if we're serious about asking the questions and serious about getting the answers, I think we need to at least flag for folks where we might have time to build that in, because I think otherwise there will be an assumption of the worst, and I don't think that's going to be helpful to us. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina. That's a good warning. Caboose?
Yes, I have a comment with respect to the timeline, item 13, that is currently called optional. The first item, I have a comment on that. This item to asking or informing GAC whether or not these recommendations would have any public policy issue should not be under the optional, should be under the main, because the GAC is at least one of the prime responsible for the public policy issue, so the matter is not optional. So I suggest that we take this item from the optional and move it to the initial one and inform them. This is point one. And point two, when we inform them on the 23rd of February, we ask them to reply at the latest and deadline, and I think that deadline would be before the document going to the board for consideration. We should not make it open because they may not reply to that. It is very important this link will be maintained between the GAC and the GNSO. Whenever we have GAC advice, GNSO has a comment always. Whenever you have recommendation, GAC may have comment as well. Therefore, I suggest that we're moving this item 13 from the optional to the initial part of the text. And second, we put a deadline for the GAC reply to the question raised by sometime, not later than the next meeting of the ICANN, that means ICANN GAC 64, which is in March 2019. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. And, I'm not sure, my reading of that was that optional applied to the public forum discussion only and not the GAC informing the GAC. So we'll make that really clear in a version of this timeline that we publish. So thanks for pointing that out. Nice use of capitals. Christine Milton?
Hello, everybody. This is Milton Mueller. I just wanted to express support for what Christina said, perhaps a little more strongly, that we're going to need public comment on the revisions we make after the public comment period and to find out whether the changes we've made are actually acceptable.
Thank you, Milton. Let's get on to the substantive part of the discussion. So we're going to review purpose E, which has to do with data escrow, and we're putting up a doc here. And could you put in the wiki link or the Google Doc link or whatever it is to this document so people can look on it on their laptop as well as in the Adobe room, because I know some people prefer that. And I think Mark Anderson, were you going to take us through some of this wording here?
Hey, Kurt. It's Mark Anderson. Can you hear me?
Yep, perfectly.
Okay. This is Mark, and I can sort of tee this up a little bit. Barry a little bit to get some of the wording in here, but happy to kick things off. There's a little bit of background. Purpose E is a discussion on escrow, and this was started in a small breakout session in LA. During that small breakout session, we focused only on registrar escrow and didn't have time to get to registry escrow. And so Barry and staff asked me to sort of take the work that was done for registrar escrow and adjust it for registries. And so I started that work in LA and sort of got distracted by other things. Finally, in Barcelona, sort of wrapped up my edits to worksheet E and sent that along to Barry. A lot had changed in the meantime, including the template. And so Barry took my feedback and put it into the new worksheet format. And that's what I think everybody sees in front of them today. Over this past week, I've been spending a lot of time, going through reviewing the worksheets. And I think in some cases, they reflect the fact that we've made edits to edits to edits, and in some cases, I think we've sort of lost track of the forest for the trees. We're looking at these things so closely, and by saying that, that's my way of saying sometimes I think we need to take a step back and look at what are we trying to achieve. So in preparing for this, I was thinking about that with escrow. And what we're trying to do is make sure that, the escrow processing that registries and registrars, I'll lump registrars in that too, although this is specifically about registries. Our objective here is to make sure that, the processing that registries and registrars are doing, to escrow registrant data, is compliant with GDPR. I think that's really the task in front of us, what we're trying to achieve, our objective, if you take a step back and look at that, maybe a 1,000-foot view. And so I went through the worksheet again, and I looked at the temporary specification again as well. And Appendix B in the temporary specification is what deals specifically with escrow. There's a smattering of escrow references throughout the document, but Appendix B is the supplemental data escrow requirements. And there, if I were to take some liberties in interpreting what the temporary specification is trying to accomplish, I think it's basically, in the case of escrow, it's trying to make sure that the escrow agreements themselves, and that's the agreements that take place between the escrow agent and, depending on the specific arrangement, the registry, the registrar, and in some cases ICANN, are compliant with GDPR. And so really, I think that's exactly where we are as a working group, and exactly where our recommendations reside. I don't think I've heard any discussion or any opinions from anybody in the group that escrow itself is not a legitimate processing activity, that the escrow itself needs to substantively change, that we shouldn't do it or need to make major overhauls. I think in my review and looking at the comments and the worksheets and the temporary specification, I think that the main concern is that the agreements themselves, which in many cases are quite old and predate GDPR significantly, really need to be refreshed in order to take into account GDPR. And I don't think that's changed at all. And so if you look through my comments, in the first one, the purpose rationale, Barry put in the text I wrote in my worksheet, The draft recommendation there is really that data processing agreements should be reviewed and updated as necessary to ensure they're in line with GDPR. Paraphrasing a little bit. So if you take this up to 1,000-foot level, I think that's really what we're saying around purpose E and escrow. Escrow data, I don't think anybody's objecting to or suggesting wholesale changes to it. Merely that the agreements themselves, the legal arrangements between escrow providers, registries, registrars, and ICANN, predate GDPR and could really benefit from a refresh related to that. I think that's reflected in temporary specification, and that's really the draft recommendation language that I included in my worksheet. So I hope that helps. I've tried to take this up to 1,000-foot level, not get wrapped around the axle on the individual words here, but try and talk about sort of the principle at a high level, what I think we need to accomplish from the point of view of escrow. So I'll turn it back to you, Kurt, and anybody has questions, happy to try and answer them.
Well, that was really thoughtful. Barry, go ahead.
Thank you, Kurt. Barry Cobb for the record. Just to build on what Mark was saying here, this registry purpose for purpose E was modeled after the registrar purpose because it was in a much more matured state. As he also mentioned, I incorporated his consent to, our new workbook version. What I would like to draw the group's attention to is there is kind of a departure from some of our other working groups, and this goes to towards page 2 under the lawfulness of processing tests section. And specifically, there's a couple of points that the group should consider here. Under ECHO PA1, or Processing Activity 1. I think as Mark stated it, that registry escrow is a downstream processing activity, and there's nothing collected specifically for the purpose of escrow. So what's being suggested in this workbook, and possibly the registrar workbook, we'll circle back to that in a minute, is that perhaps the EAP1 processing activity of collection is really considered or taking place likely under purpose B, so that more or less this processing activity would remain blank. But of course, there's still the transmission, disclosure, and retention processing activities that are still relevant to the area of escrow. And then secondarily, what I'd like to point out is moving down to the data elements matrix. What you'll also notice here is that the fields that are marked for the three processing activities, transmission, disclosure, and retention, right now are just modeled or extracted from what the registrar workbook contains now. What I'm suggesting, or at least for the group to consider as to what makes sense, if you'll recall, maybe a week or two before we left for Barcelona, we put together a draft compilation of all of the collection processing activities across all of our purposes. And you'll recall way over to the far right, there was some logic. It always happens. Sorry about that. You'll recall in that example over in the far right, there was logic that was built into that matrix that would understand if there was any particular data element that was marked as required or those that are marked as optional, and I know that there's still some aspects to optional that we need to work through, or thirdly, if the field wasn't required. So what I'm contemplating that might be best for the registry purpose here is that after we have more or less finalized our workbooks, we've confirmed that at the individual data element level, what all of the data elements are required for transmission from the registrar to the registry, that compilation is what would be reflected in the three processing activities of transmission, disclosure, and retention here. So that would kind of be an after effect once we have worked through the workbooks. And I'll just point out that the registrar escrow version, at least based on the current RAA, is very specific about what data fields are actually included into that escrow deposit. So we'll just want to make sure to confirm that those pretty much will stay in the same or at least match in line with what is currently listed under the RAA. But again, the registry version, which is much more of a complex escrow deposit, will basically be an end result of the data that we understand is being transferred from registrar to registry across our purposes. And lastly, that it, I think, especially in terms of implementation, that what we're amending here, at least from a policy perspective, doesn't disrupt the technical criteria by which that escrow deposit is forming. And one last statement. At the beginning of our group's deliberations, and I believe also within the temp spec, there is also the aspect of EBRO, Emergency Backend Registry Operator. Based on initial review of that process, the idea or our question was, does EBRO require a separate workbook from escrow? And in reviewing the EBRO process, it as one subcomponent to that process is that the registry escrow is invoked. And so I think the question on the table is, of the overall EBRO process, is there any other registration data that is that is collected or transferred to the EBRO provider that exists outside of an escrow deposit? So far, the initial indicator doesn't seem to think that. So perhaps the way forward is that we just document within this workbook and later in the report that under the terms of EBRO, escrow is invoked, refer to workbook E/registries for understanding what the escrow deposit is. A lot to unpack there. I'll answer any questions if need be. Thanks.
Yeah, so maybe for this group as a first round of comments, And again, I think this works really, really thoughtful. Is one, any comments on the draft recommendation, and two, as far as the processing itself, I find the argument that collection is omitted from data escrow to be quite compelling. So, if we want to talk about those two things, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Kurt, and hi, everyone. I guess for EPA1, the collection, it says an A at the moment. I think we need to speak to that, since that is a processing activity that the data subject needs to be informed about at the time of collection of the data. If we don't speak to the purpose of collecting the data for escrowing it or, for that matter, for potentially passing it on to the EBRO, if we don't make that transparent, then we would need to deal with a change of purpose subsequently, which is always problematic. So I think I would recommend to adjust that bit for escrow and the bureau so that we're on the safe side. Thank you.
And that would be a change to this purpose, right, Thomas? Not purpose A.
It's I'm talking about the EPA1 collection of registration data for escrow.
Right.
It basically says that no additional data is being collected, which is true.
Right.
But we need to be transparent about this additional purpose of collecting data for escrowing it and for making it available to the eBureau.
Transparent to the registrant?
Correct. The registrant or the data subject needs to be informed at the time of the collection about the purpose of collection or processing and the various processing activities. And, you know, it's just to add an additional two or three sentences to let the data subject know that in addition to the other things that we have identified, the data will also be transferred to escrow agents and, in case of registry failure, to an eBureau.
Okay, and I'm sorry for asking follow-up questions. I think that's captured well in the chart, but this isn't consent in any way, right? This is still, you know, we're still using the same lawful basis or legal basis for this data processing.
So, Kurt, if this question is for me, in my view, this would be covered by 6.1.F,
right,
with no consent from the data subject required.
Right. So it's just an informal. Okay, Emily?
Hi, Kurt. Very quick one. I was requesting whether Barry could summarize his remarks and just put them on the list, because it was quite a lot of complex. There was quite a lot of complex stuff in his remarks, and just wanted to take a look at those on the list, if that's okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. I've learned when certain people talk, I take no paper out, and I do that with Barry, because I know he has a lot of meaningful things to say. So, Barry, if it's all right with you, could you succinctly write an email to the list that lays out what you said? And I hope we capture and discuss most of these issues here. Thanks for that intervention, Emily. Alan Greenberg, how are you today?
Thank you. I'm presuming that what will eventually be presented to the registrant is the union of all of the collection, in all of the purposes associated with collection. Given that, and assuming that's right, then I think there has to be a purpose here, because we are using the data, and therefore there's a purpose associated with collection, even if there isn't any additional collection. So I agree that there needs to be a purpose for the collection. With regard to eBureau, just a minor nitpicking point, there's a number of references in the document where we're saying we need to relook at the contract, at the various contracts, and I think we need to reference eBureau there also. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Those are two good comments. I think that's a good place to mention eBureau. I wonder if language that says okay, so I'm just rereading the draft recommendation. So I think that's put the right way. We don't want to relook at contracts. We just want to have a policy that says they're GDPR compliant. So Barry's captured that right up in the chat. So that's good. I think we've discussed this too, but Barry's final point was about capturing eBureau within this purpose, which I think is the right approach. And we discussed a couple ways of doing that. Are there any comments about that? I think we kind of already covered it. So this is a little risky. So Barry, to Emily's point, are there specific – oh, go ahead, Mark.
Thanks, Kurt. It's Mark Anderson. When I filled out the worksheet, I didn't specifically mention eBro. I focused just on the registry escrow activity. When Barry was doing this, he pulled into his draft, he pulled eBro in. So there is some reference to there. And how it relates to registrar escrow is kind of interesting. In when we did the registrar escrow activity in LA, we noted, there is no eBro equivalent. In the case that escrow is necessary, I can pick a registrar to take over. In the case that it's needed for registries, it's similar, except that it's not the universe of accredited registrars like registrars. It's just the eBro providers under contract, which I think there are currently three. I think the activity itself is not substantially different. It's just you have these eBro providers that I can choose this from instead of just all the ICANN accredited registrars. It's a long way of saying I think it's materially the same question from registries to registrars. That said, when the small group met in LA, the one thing we noted that should be considered is that the jurisdiction, a jurisdiction change for a registrar may be impactful. For example, if the failing registrar was based in Europe and the gaining registrar was in North America, that may have ramifications. And so we just sort of noted that. I think probably the same thing applies from eBro. I'm not sure exactly what what a recommendation would be from our group, but I think it's worth noting. It's something we discussed in LA specific to the registrar worksheet for Purpose E, and probably applies to the registry worksheet for Purpose E on eBro as well. Thanks.
Sorry, everyone. Alan Greenberg, thanks very much for that comment, Mark.
Caitlin has her hand up. Maybe you want to go to her first.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Alan. Caitlin?
Thank you, Alan. I did have a quick response to Mark's comment,
yes.
And I just wanted to note for the group's information that ICANN does have a process called the de-accredited registrar transition procedure. So perhaps to Mark's point, the group recommend that one of the points for ICANN determining a gaining registrar in the event of a failing or terminating registrar is to consider geographic implications when designating that gaining registrar. And we can write something up to be included in the initial report for the team's review if that would work for that issue. Thank you.
Great, Caitlin. Thank you. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, thank you. Just two small points. It dawns on me as we're talking about this that escrow really has two purposes. One is in case of a catastrophic event of the registrar or registry to get their own data back. I'd like to think every registrar or registry has their own backup, and that wouldn't be necessary, but nevertheless, that is a conceivable use of it. The other is in the case of a failure to transfer. And it just dawned on me that although the escrow purpose for registrar failure and the eBro purpose for registry failure are effectively the same, we've named them differently, inconsistently. So we've named the registrar one escrow, the process of saving the data, and the registry one is the process of retrieving the data, the EBRO, the emergency backup. So it's it just points out that, you know, we've used these terms differently, but they ended up having the same impact, even though we've named them after a different part of the process. Thank you.
So I think that's right. I think the purpose is the same. I'm channeling James. I think I know what he means by not exactly, but I don't know if it's a James. If you want to make the point, raise your hand. But go ahead, James.
Speaking, and I think that the difference is that the EBRO steps in sort of as a lifeboat for a registry that has exclusive operation of a TLD, where the escrow from the registrar side is really meant to for a reassignment of a portfolio in case there's a business or technical failure. So I think there is a, you know, I think in practical terms and for the purposes of defining purpose E, we can probably treat them fairly similarly. But I mean, for example, an EBRO would take over, essentially a whole hog of a TLD data, whereas a registrar portfolio might go out for bid, might have multiple interested registrars, might have no interested registrars. So it's a slightly different process, and I think that's probably what leads to the different nomenclature. But I think that for this purpose, we can probably treat them as mostly equivalent. Thanks.
Right. I don't think, and I don't think it affects Mark's writing, but I think it's good that we think of our efforts holistically. Barry?
Thank you, Kurt. Barry Cobb for the record. And just to tack on what James said in response to Alan's question, and that's pretty much what I'm trying to capture in the graphics. Between the registrar version and the registry version, at a high level, the process is relatively the same. You know, a deposit is sent from the contracted party to the escrow provider. In the event of, for registrars, in the event of a decreditation and eventually there's a registrar or a gaining registrar that is awarded those domains, in effect, that escrow deposit is disclosed to that gaining registrar so that they can transfer the names, et cetera. And in a roundabout way or at a very high level, the same occurs for a registry should there be this catastrophic failure and EBRO services are invoked, that escrow deposit from the registry is provided to that escrow, that EBRO provider, and services somewhat restored. So I'm hoping at the high level that this accomplishes what we need. In reviewing through the various workbooks, I think it would be good for us to just confirm that these graphics are an accurate reflection of the processing activities that we've defined here. Thank you.
Thanks, Bray. And I like the graphic representation quite a bit. Margie?
Yes, hi, this is Margie. Regarding the purpose for the escrow, I note that we don't have B here, 61B. And in hearing, the way we're thinking about this, it seems that it's an integral part of the registration agreement, if you will, to ensure that the registration still survives after potential failures of either the registrar or registry. And so I guess my suggestion is it possible to also include, certainly not exclude F, but also include a reference to the possible application of B. Is that something we could consider?
Mark, do you have a response to that?
I do, thanks. This is Mark Anderson for the transcript. 61F versus 61B is something we've discussed a lot in general, and certainly that was the case on this purpose as well. While we were in LA, we talked about it a lot. We had a breakout group and then I think a follow-up breakout group talking about it. And there were, you know, there were differing schools of thought. And, you know, when I put together the worksheet, you know, the approach I decided to make, and when I filled out the worksheet and sent it to Barry, I went with 6.1F only. And, you know, realizing, you know, maybe you can make a case for 6.1B, maybe you can make a case for 6.1F, maybe we should do both. I decided to put 6.1F in there because, you know, I think what we're trying to do is set, you know, sort of a minimum baseline requirements for what the processing activities need to be. And I think from a minimum baseline activity, 6.1F makes the most sense. I think, any processor, any registry or registrar that wants to make the case for 6.1B would be free to do so. I think there would be nothing that would prevent that. But for our purposes, I think 6.1F is the clearest and easiest one to make. And I know that, you know, Amr and Tomas are saying in chat that, you know, I know some people think 6.1F is the only valid route to take, and you know, I think it's a stronger path, and I think that registries and registrars, if I can take a leap here and try and speak for registries and registrars, I think registries and registrars are fine performing the escrow processing under 6.1F. I think it's just, you know, for our purposes here as a working group, I think it's sufficient for us to just say 6.1F is a likely legitimate or is a likely legal basis for processing escrow. And for our purposes, it makes sense to use that as our assumption and go with that. You know, I recognize that that's not like, you know, a consensus group, the view of the entire group. But I think, you know, for our purposes, it would be just make much more sense and be easier for us if we assume 6.1F and proceed with that.
And this is Margie, if I could reply. I don't remember where we landed on the legal analysis thing, but I thought this was something we were going to explore, but I wasn't in that sub-team on the potential for legal analysis. I mean, obviously I heard all those arguments back in Los Angeles. I feel like it's something we should call out in the worksheet as perhaps an alternative view. One of the things I worry about in being too narrow in our application of the purposes is that we still don't yet know how some of this is going to be interpreted later on. And it could be that as, you know, DPAs and others start providing input and advice on how to read these sections, it might actually fall into place. And the reason that I raise it in the context of escrow is I would hate to be in a situation where a registrar decides not to provide the information to ICANN because they feel that they, in their view, the balance of interest, you know, are you know, in favor of the registrant not having that information in escrow, and therefore ICANN doesn't have the ability to require it. So that's the reason I raise it, you know, and I understand that there's many in this team that feel that it's not fully applicable, but I would encourage us at least mentioning it as an alternative.
Go ahead.
Kurt, if I could follow up real quick, I think one of the Margie raises, you know, one of the main concerns with 6.1F is 6.1F, she's pointing out that there's a balancing act, and she's concerned that a registrant could refuse to provide data, but I think if you look at the balance of the worksheet. We're saying we don't collect data to escrow it. We're only escrowing data collected for other purposes. So I think I think her concern is addressed by the fact that, processing, the collection of the data is justified under other purposes, and that pursuing the legitimate interests here under 6.1F for escrowing the data, is a much, much clearer path. So I get one of the big concerns about 6.1F is the balancing act that occurs. But, like I said, considering that, the data is not collected to be escrowed, as a registrant, you don't register a domain name so that your data can be escrowed. But it would be reasonable and in my interest, as a registrant that data is escrowed in the event of business or technical failure. So I understand her concern, but I think that's mitigated by the way we've laid out the worksheet E as being merely a downstream processing activity.
Thanks. For other worksheets, we've included 6.1B as a possibility, and I think we're going to do that in this one and consult with DPAs. I want to say, though, that a couple of things. Under 6.1F or 6.1B, I don't think there's any difference in the data collected or transmitted. So I think the effect is the same. And I think what our policy is saying that 6.1F is a legal basis for processing the data in this way. So data escrow and the use of EBRO is going to be written into the contracts, and the contracts are going to require this. And so there's essentially, I guess, a balancing that occurs every time, but the balancing is exactly the same and in effect won't occur. So what we're saying here is that 6.1F is the legal basis, so we can write this into the contracts and then, to not process data in this way would require the registry or registrar to violate their contract and get some dispensation from ICANN in order to do that. And I think that's the same whether ICANN, regardless of what legal basis we use. So I think, Margie, I think your concern is addressed by the fact that we're going to write this stuff into the contracts because we've declared 6.1B is a valid legal basis for doing that. So it's in the contract. So I think that's kind of closed. I don't disagree with that. We can include a note in here about 6.1B as a possibility and put that in the so Merck is correcting me. So I don't disagree that we can add 6.1B in here as a possibility and consult with DPAs on that. We've been at this quite a bit. If anybody has anything different to say other than what's been said before, I don't really want to discuss this further. So I'm asking for people to put down their hands, but for those that haven't, Emily?
Thanks, Kurt. Very quickly, to Margie's point about 6.1B, and I think this is a new point, at least in this call, 6.1B itself doesn't guarantee that something is GDPR compliant, whereas the exercise we're going through, which is looking at all of the justifications and the legitimate interests, more or less as expressed in 6.1F, will get us to a stage, particularly with this one, where I don't hear any disagreement around the table that this is a legitimate thing to do and actually ultimately in the registrant's interests to do, that the 6.1B is almost a downstream thing. It isn't something that you can just pop into every situation and say, well, it's in the contract, therefore it's lawful and complies with GDPR. It's the other way around. So that's just a very quick point and quick response to Margie's point on that.
Thanks, Emily. Alan?
Thank you. Just when I think I'm starting to understand everything, I get more confused. when we're talking about under EPA1, are we talking about collection of the data by the registry, because this is a registry purpose, or are we talking about the original collection by the registrar?
Barry or Mark?
Sorry, Alan, this is Mark. Which one are you talking about again?
I'm talking about EPA1, the collection by the registrar. The collection is from the registrant is done by the registrar. We're talking about a registry purpose here. Are we referring back to the original collection from the registrant, or are we referring to the collection, essentially the receiving the data by the registry?
From the registrar.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Barry.
Barry has his hand up.
That's correct. The original intent is that the collection occurs at the registrar from the registrant, and then subsequently in the second processing activity is transferred from the registrar to the registry. And I believe that's why Mark and the registries were thinking that, you know, in terms of looking at the purpose of escrow, there is no need to actually collect the data from the registrar via the registrant or data subject, because that is covered under purpose ARA. And as Thomas notes in the chat, the registry doesn't collect data from the data subjects directly. But as we noted, for EPA1, that we'll make this cross reference back to the purpose A in terms of the transparency aspect to the data subject, that your data is being escrowed, that we discussed earlier.
Okay. So essentially, we're saying the data is being collected, among other reasons, for thick registries to transmit to the registry, who will in turn transmit it to the escrow agent.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah. Given that, I'm not sure that the collection activity is needed here. But I would argue from the registrar's point of view, since we're now talking about the registrar doing the collecting, that it is 6.1b. Specifically, a registrant registers a domain name not only to put the entry in the table, but to presume it's going to stay there for the life of the registration, and that may require escrow, invoking escrow in case of a failure of either registry or registrar. So, since we're talking about the registrar doing the collecting, I would argue that 6.1b is a strong reason, because the registration contract is for a period of time, and the registrant has an expectation it will be maintained for that whole period of time. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'm going to resist commenting. Go ahead, Diane.
Diane, this is Terry. I see where your mic is activated and unmuted. However, we're not hearing you. And Diane, it's Terry. We're still not hearing you. Please let me know if you would like a dial out on the telephone. And please check the mute on your side.
Claudia, do you want to go while we get Diane hooked up?
Sure. I actually was not sure that no special data is required for the purpose of escrowing. So I'm not sure why we do have here among the processing activities collection of registration data for escrow. And because collection actually, nothing is particularly collected for the purpose of escrow. And if we are to put collection of data, of registration data for escrow, assuming that there is something special that we collect in this regard, then I don't see it as 61F. It is certainly a 61B if we do have a special kind of data collected for escrow. This definitely goes under the performance of the contract. However, again, I'm not sure that we need to have this activity at all within the purposes.
Thanks, Hadia. And I think I think that's why Barry was mentioning that collection be actually eliminated as a purpose. Is Diane hooked up yet? I'll go with. Try again.
Hi, could you hear me now?
Yeah, you're a little fainter than you'd like to be. I'd like to cut off with you. I don't want to talk about purposes anymore. We'll include a note in here about the possibility of 61B, and maybe I'll take a shot at writing an email about it. Go ahead, Diane.
Okay, well, that was my main discussion. I just will quickly add that while 61B under GDPR does strictly require that there be privity of contract for the necessary fulfillment of a contractual obligation, I do think that, to Margie's and Alan's point, that if the updated escrow agreements are put into place and the appropriate data processing agreements are put into place with model clauses to cover for the transfers of the data as we're discussing it, that there is a basis to be able to have 61B as an alternative basis or additional.
Thanks, Diane. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. I guess, I'm not sure exactly where Barry landed on, the collection as a processing activity, but I wanted to, I wanted to make sure I stated, that, for escrow, the processing activity we should be talking about is just the escrow of the data. And that collection is occurring for other purposes. I think that was sort of Alan, what led to Alan's initial question is why do we have this other processing activity? We shouldn't. We're not collecting data so it can be escrowed. We're escrowing existing registration data collected for other purposes in the event of business or technical failure. So I wanted to make sure that was clear. And then, on 61F versus 61B, I'll just, make one final, I guess plea on this one is that, I think to all the, working group members, again, trying to speak on behalf of contracted parties here, but, contracted parties, I think we're comfortable doing processing the data for escrow under 61F. Right. I mean, you're hearing from the people that will actually do the processing activity that we're comfortable that 61F provides us a legal basis for us to perform this contracting activity. And so we're comfortable with that. I want to ask working group members to consider, can you be comfortable with that too? If we're comfortable actually processing the data under 61F. Why is anybody objecting to this? I realize that there's you can debate it. It's not a done deal. But if the contracted parties, the ones doing the processing activity, are comfortable with 61F, can that be good enough for the working group?
And maybe the contrapositive to that is contracted parties might be uncomfortable using 61B as a legal basis because it's not as defensible. Amar, take us home.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. And thanks, Mark. That was I think I agree pretty much with everything you just said. But I just wanted to, again, repeat what I may have said in the chat a little earlier, that, you know, for the purpose of escrow, regardless of the activity, whether it's transferring the data or whether it's the escrow agent retaining it for a period of time, these are processing activities that are done as a result of a contract between parties that the data subject is not a member of. So I don't understand how 61B could be a lawful basis that we could rely on, or that we could ask, you know, ICANN or its contracted parties or the escrow agent to be comfortable with when faced with, you know, meeting legal obligations in terms of GDPR. We need to make sure that, you know, these folks are covered, and I don't think 61B is going to do that simply because the data subject is not a party to the contract that results in these processing activities. So I think it would be a good idea to just go ahead with 61F. I think it does it, and as Mark has stated, you know, the contracted parties are comfortable with this moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Amar. Thanks for the discussion, everyone. I want to, we took a little more time with that than I wanted. I want to take some time to display the initial report. And I don't think we've done it yet, Marika. And if we haven't, could you put in the link to the initial report? And don't like touch it when it's on your laptop, because the ink is still a little damp. And then, Marika, are you going to kind of describe what's in here? Not kind of describe.
Yes, thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I've just put in the link in Adobe Connect Room to where you can download the PDF version of the draft initial report. You know, we didn't want to send it to you just prior to the meeting. It's quite a lengthy document, and we didn't overwhelm everyone with it. But, of course, we'll circulate it after the meeting, and instead, for those that prefer to look at it on your own screen, you can download it from the link I sent below. So I wanted to take this opportunity to brief you, walk you through the content of the initial report, which will hopefully facilitate your review of this document, but also provide you with a clearer perspective of where we're currently at, as well as identify, you know, the areas where you know, some further discussion or work may be necessary. So what I first put up here on the screen is basically the table of contents, so you have an idea of what is currently captured in the initial report. You know, Chapter 3 is something that, you know, we already put the skeleton of that together shortly after the LA meeting, and you know, you already saw that, but we've kind of substantially beefed that up with all the work that has been taking place you know, since the LA meeting. The other parts are new, but as I think we explained before, those are more of a description in nature. They basically outline, you know, some of the required elements that an initial report is expected to contain to ensure that, you know, the broader audience understands, you know, how did the group develop these recommendations, what it was tasked to do, who are actually involved in the deliberations, and, you know, what was done to obtain community input and what input was provided. Of course, you know, we also have an executive summary here, but that is obviously a part that will be updated at a stage when we're in a more final form of the initial report to be able to capture that. What we've done in the report, and I'll slowly start walking you through it. As I said, you know, executive summary has some of the background elements already there, but the biggest part and the meat, of course, of the report will be the proposed response to the charter questions and the preliminary recommendations, which will need to be updated. You know, we try to be quite detailed as well in explaining the approach that the group has taken, how we've moved basically from you know, the original fact-finding and triage effort through to the discussion summary indexes, to the data element workbooks, the small teams that we've used, as well as the mediation techniques that were applied. So again, you know, the community is able to follow along how the group ended up with the responses and to the charter questions, as well as preliminary recommendations. So as I said, I think this is really the heart of the report, and that will probably be the focus of attention for those reviewing it, but also for the work of the EPDP team in finalizing this document. So what we've tried to do is basically capture for all the charter questions, the work that has been done up to date. And I want to be clear there that basically reflects the work until the end of ICANN 63. So some of that, what you see in here, doesn't reflect yet, conversations that we had today or early in the week, or some of the input that was received on the mailing list, but it aims to provide a kind of status quo of where things were at the end of ICANN 63. Again, noting that some of the parts that are in here were not agreed yet or signed off yet, or they're still under discussion. So we just want to make sure that is very clear. This is not intended to be represent an agreed upon responses or recommendations, but it's just to give you a view of what it would look like if what we did last would be plugged into the initial report. So what we've tried to do is kind of with highlighting and color coding to get a bit more clarity on what are kind of outstanding items and what are issues that are more kind of updates that staff will need to make based on where certain things land, or updates that are made to different documents that we're working on. So basically the items that are highlighted in yellow are just more flags for staff to kind of update those aspects based on either how the report comes together, if it's kind of referencing annexes and different parts of the report. So that needs to be in a more firm state for us to do that. As well as, of course, flagging some of the documents that are being worked on separately. And we just need to make sure that, for example, once the data element workbooks are finalized, that we make sure that, those two align and have the same content. And then there are also sections in here, and I'll just scroll down to one of those, where we've highlighted or flagged language in blue. So either language in blue is reflecting documents still under discussion. So, for example, it captures the latest state of the small team one and two conversations. But as I said, that language is not final. It's just basically to have a placeholder for where the conversation is currently at, but clearly recognizing that that is information that will need to be further updated as the group works through that. Or it covers areas where staff has suggested some language based on the conversations to date. And I think where that has happened, we've clearly marked that in brackets as something for the group to review and consider. And again, calling it out in blue as something to come back to and further discuss. Then there are also a couple of areas, and I'll scroll there now, where we flag questions in red. And those are basically questions where we currently don't have either a draft response or haven't really discussed those in detail. And we briefly captured, I think, some of these as well during our the last session at ICANN 63, where it probably would be helpful if someone is willing to volunteer to write up some draft language that could go into the initial report. And again, that I think we called these out in that meeting as well. It's talking about registrar's responsibilities, registry's responsibilities, and as well ICANN specific duties. So maybe this is something where we can have some volunteers put forward some language. I'll release the document for scrolling now so you can have a look through it as well. In addition, then after that, the document continues in kind of outlining what the next steps are for the group. And then it contains a number of annexes that talk about the background, details the membership of the group, as well as attendance in the meetings. It outlines the community input that was obtained as a result of early input. And then, of course, part of the substance of the report, and you know, of course, we're pulling out certain aspects of the data element workbooks in the chapter three, but we'll also be annexing the full data element workbook so people are able to see that in detail and kind of understand the whole thinking process of the working group and how it resulted in those recommendations. So we really hope that this is helpful. I said, you know, this is a first draft. We'll need to consider and discuss further how to best manage, review, and possible updates and edits to the document. Of course, staff will be working in parallel as agreements are reached on certain aspects of the work. Certain recommendations, for example, were discussed in relation to ESCAR earlier today, so those will need to get incorporated. It should also reflect as we go through the small teamwork as well as finalizing the data element workbook. So that is all work that will need to happen. But there may be, of course, other areas where EPDP team members may want to weigh in or want to discuss further. So I think from a staff perspective, the first priority should really be for the group to look at, section three, and flag whether, in addition to all those areas that have already been highlighted in blue, so those are kind of on record as items that will need to be further discussed or finalized, to indicate if there are any other aspects that you believe need further conversation, or whether, and if not, we're kind of assuming that it means you're comfortable with that at least going out for public comment. And what we did as well, and I didn't call that out yet, and I think it goes a little bit towards, I think, what Christina was talking about earlier as well. What we did try to do is already start as well for each of the sections and identify specific questions. So basically questions that the group would like input on in response to the public comment period. And I'll just take you to one of these so you can have an idea of that, because something we discussed as well within the leadership team, that probably for public comment, it would be really helpful if we can direct people to answer questions that the group really would like to have input on, instead of making very general statements or covering areas that the group has already discussed, to really try and focus public comment through the asking of specific questions and really see if that is a way of getting very targeted feedback. So again, of course, if you have suggestions on how we can phrase those questions even more specifically, or whether the additional questions that we should be calling out, I think that is another area where we would really welcome input. So I think that's, in a nutshell, what staff has worked on. We hope that it does show that a lot of work has already been done by the group, and it's really coming together in the form of the initial report. Of course, there's still quite a bit of work remaining, but in this way, we hope that it's at least clearly mapped. And as we discussed before, it will allow for the planning of work between now and the publication of the initial report by focusing on those areas and updating those as needed. So I'm hoping that was helpful, and happy to take any questions or comments.
Thanks very much, Marika. I have two comments. One is, even though you're just seeing this now, so you can't really react to it, I just saw it for the first time, or went through it for the first time yesterday, and spent a few hours making comments and understanding it. The next step for us on the support team will be, and now that we have this together, to review it and do sort of a gap analysis between where we are and where we want to be for the initial report. And as Marika stated, those are largely the highlighted items in the report. But what we plan to do, taking into account what's in this initial report, and then your input on the workbooks and other deliverables and the action items, we'll work over the next few days so that we have we do that gap analysis and schedule the next few or several meetings with the intent of covering those, so we have an initial report that's sufficiently complete. A second kind of more detailed comment I want to make the questions are in, the first question is in front of you, maybe still if you're not scrolling around, is you know, while the questions are posed in the order of the document, we're working on a way to collect comment in a way that the comments are easily sortable, or that, you know, comments are made on individual purposes, not all the purposes together, so that you can read them easily and do your analysis more easily. And of course, that's combined with the public comment tool that the policy support team has developed for past weekends. And I see Barry's noting about over the weekend the workbooks will be combined into one document, so it's easier for you to see the gestalt version of that. Third, one of the tests I'm doing is kind of taking all the recommendations and just lining them all up by themselves without the supporting documentation. I think that goes to Benedict's clarity question earlier, and that is that's sort of one way to test the clarity, is that the recommendations kind of stand on their own. So that's one test I'm doing. So with that, does anybody wish to comment? But I don't know, before Benedict comments, Marika, so what's our homework, and how are we going to comment on this?
Thanks, Kurt. So I said, I think from a staff perspective, our hope is that, you know, the initial homework would be to focus on identifying, you know, what other areas should be marked in blue. So basically, what other aspects of the initial report should be discussed, leading up to the publication of the initial report. I think following that, and I think, you know, that's something we probably need to discuss, how to go about any other edits or input that people want to make on the initial report. I think, you know, as we said before, anything that's kind of clarifying input or any grammar issues that are identified or any other, you know, minor things, of course, you know, please send those to us, you know, off list, and, you know, we're happy to fix those. But of course, as you noted as well, there's a delicate balance between clarifying something and changing the meaning. And similarly, we'll probably need to think a bit about how to go about, you know, any changes to, you know, recommendations, especially where it pertains to agreements that were previously reached. So I think we need to be very careful about, and again, that goes to everyone in the group, when you provide input, you know, make sure that it kind of doesn't take us back to discussions that we've already had and conversations that were, you know, already closed. So maybe we can ask the group to focus on that, and then I think leadership will maybe want to discuss how to go about, you know, soliciting specific input and what is the best way of doing that, because redlining may not be the way.
So that was really my question. I think it was more of a process question. How should we submit comments?
Yes, so I think for now, basically, as the first ask is to focus on areas that need to be in blue. So just basically indicate.
My question is really, should we be printing this out and redlining it in some way? Should we be sending an email with a comment? How should we be submitting that?
Yeah. Okay, got your question now. So staff preference would be, and we'll produce a version that has line numbers. So our preference would be that you would basically submit your comments on the mailing list, identifying clearly the line number you're talking about and the proposed changes that you're making. And again, this pertains to, you know, substantive issues. If there's a minor spelling mistake, just send it to us off list and we can fix that. In that way, staff will be able to kind of collect, you know, the different pieces of input and try to reconcile those. And of course, take back any items where, you know, there may be differing positions, because we're worried if redlining may make things kind of messy and hard to keep version control. So our suggestion is to work in that way. We produce a line numbered version, and people submit to the list, you know, their comments, issues, questions, by indicating the line number and explaining what they want to discuss or what they would like to see changed, with a rationale for that, and then, you know, that allows others as well then to react to that, and for staff to reconcile it with any other input that may be received on similar items.
Thanks. Okay, Benedict, thanks for being patient.
Hey, no worries. That's actually just a question for contracted parties, and perhaps Alan has a thought on this. I've been reviewing the Purpose F workbook, and it's really vague about the processing. It says essentially that the contracted parties transmit data to ICANN for compliance purposes. Can anybody comment, at the moment, is that by purely registrars or both registrars and registries? And in the future, what did you guys envision? And please, only responses from contracted parties on this one. Thank you.
So, just so everybody remembers, Purpose F is about contractual compliance and data transferred to ICANN. Go ahead, Alan.
Thanks. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, thank you.
Perfect. Sorry, one second. Sorry, there's just a lot of background noise here. To be honest, Benedict, if we could possibly think about that, because my brain is not actually switched to S at the moment, but if we can just have a ponder about it and get back to you on that one, I think it might be a lot easier.
No worries, and thanks, Alan. The reason I ask is I'm just trying to work out. I've written a purpose O of research as I've been asked to do with and Fazi and I have been working on. That's finished, and I just wanted to sort of highlight that my current thinking is that that data should go from the normal flow for thick registries, i.e., collected on the registrar by the registrar. Transmitted to the registry where they're thick, and then safeguards applied at the registry, and then that whatever data is the safeguarded data for research purposes is then passed to ICANN.org in just the same way that we do for compliance. So, and I just wanted to find out if anybody like had felt that was really awful and wanted to raise any objections to that. Otherwise, I'll ping that language around to the list in the next half hour or so. Thanks.
I think half an hour is pushing up against the deadline, so I'd like to see it. But does anybody have an immediate comment to Benedict's question? Emily.
Hi, thanks for the question, Benedict. I think the answer, unfortunately, is it depends. And also the data shared with compliance is not always personal data. It might well be information about a registry or registrar procedures and how they are compliant with the numerous obligations aside from personal data processing that exist in the contracts. Thanks.
So I want to continue to – anybody got a hand up? No, good. So I want to continue to think about how we can best submit comments on this and in some sort of regular way. So, you know, I'll collaborate with the support team. Maybe we can come up with a format for commenting so everybody's comments are kind of in the same, you know, format. Here's the liner section we're talking about. Here is the, you know, here's the text, and here's what I would change, and here's the rationale or something. But we'll, you know, I think we should come up with a standard commenting format so we can easily understand everyone's comments, and there's the right amount of rigor to each comment. Also, you know, I want to emphasize, I think Marika's last comment or penultimate comment about deference given to the decisions of the group that the group's already made. So if you think that something needs to be changed, I think part of that comment should be this isn't what the group decided. The group decided something else. So that would be the best way to recommend changes in the text that's not highlighted. And then finally, the most important things for us is to identify those things that we think have to be done in order for this to be an initial report that meets the requirements of an initial report, which is really clear in what the potential agreements are. So please look at the report from that eye, because this is our product and we want it to stand up to scrutiny at the end of the day. So I know it's almost impossible to comment on this work, so I'm going to pause for 30 more seconds and then ask Marika or Caitlin if we have any actions coming out of this meeting. Caitlin, you want to go ahead?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Caitlin Tubergen for the transcript. I have four action items coming out of this meeting. Excuse me. First action item is for the support staff to update the workbooks to make a reference back to Purpose A regarding transparency of collection to the registrant and data subject. And the support staff will also make a notation or reference under Processing Activity 1, or EPA1, which is collection of registration data for the purpose of escrow. Second action item is for Barry to summarize his discussion about Purpose E analysis and send that via email to the list. Third action item is for support staff to draft a recommendation for the EPDP team's review, and that recommendation is in reference to adding the jurisdictional impact to the gaining registrar or eBorough designation. And lastly, the leadership team will brainstorm an effective methodology for the EPDP team to review the initial report. Thanks, Kurt. Back over to you.
Anybody have any closing comments? Great. Well, thanks very much for a good meeting, everybody. And I have like 24 hours off from GDPR. So we'll be talking to you soon, and I'm sure I'll see you on email exchanges. Thanks very much. So long.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned.